The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 77. Do Not Send Us an Ashtray. Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Oh, I didn't know how long I was going to be able to hold that laugh in, but no, the episode is not Do Not Send Us an Ashtray. It's kind of funny because I found out that Mark smokes, so Mark, don't send me your ashtray.
No problem.
But anyway, the real title is Do Not Send Us Astray, and this is the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I am Mark.
And I got to say, I think that's the first time I've ever done that kind of thing on the intro. Anyway, we are here to discuss Season 8, Episode 13, which is titled Do Not Send Us Astray. And don't send us astray either. it's such a strange title. Anyway, we've got some feedback from last week, so we'll start with that.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
And that, of course, was Season 8, Episode 12, titled The Key. And this first piece actually came out of something we asked in the episode I did. And that's from PB in Zane. So it is the creation of the name. Once upon a time, back in 2006, I had a normal Facebook profile under the IRL name Judy Fancher. And that's PB in Zane's real name. One day, mother-daughter drama ensues, and there is a really super long, bad, stupid, why did I do that? Hindsight is 2020 kind of Facebook rant by one Judy Fancher. Profile deleted. I swore I would never get on Facebook again. It's just way too easy to let loose and hit send, then regret it. Then in 2010, I started playing World of Warcraft and had to come up with a character name. I am so not creative, so I took letters from my pets' names and made a character named PB and Zane, a level 110 undead warlock for anyone who is interested. not exactly sure how far that is in the game. I never played it, but I don't know if you
know, Mark. No, I haven't.
Then she says, then I wanted an email address for things just game-related and a Facebook account to use for game-related stuff. So everything became PB in Zane. My family and friends started friending me there, so I just went with it. I recently resurrected the original Judy Fancher account, but I don't use it. That's it. Oh, cat's names were Patchy, Bobby D, and Zane Gray. Hence, PB in Zane. P from Patchy, Bi from Bobby D, N for and Zane for Zane Gray. Well, that's cool. I had no idea it was so elaborate or that it had anything to do with you as a game player. So I assume you still play Judy, but anyway, so thanks for that explanation. It took us 100+ episodes to ask for, but thanks for get that. I was always curious.
So we have Lara Willie Swink, 8 out of 10 walkers and flambe for this episode. Awesome sauce, finally some forward progress on this never-ending story arc. Negan finally getting some comeuppance with Rick calling him on his bullshit.
Bullshit!
He wants to save Rick's people. As Rick clarifies, Negan's definition of saved is communities living in subjugation, serfdom, and sex slavery. Rick finally unleashing some neck-biting fury on Negan and Lucille. Personally, give me Rick's hatchet over that Lucille anyway. And finally, Simon inching the saviors towards mutiny. The introduction of the key was interesting. I've been wondering for some time if TWD was ever going to move towards trying to rebuild society and infrastructure in some way. And I think the knowledge Georgie and her crew drop on the hilltop is finally a step in the right direction. Also, Simon continues to be a maniacal, precision, organized, calculating, and frightening antagonist Negan was supposed to be. Her weak sauce, I feel like the writers were always trying Tarantino the dialogue with their clever quips, but I get it's to be kind of ridiculous and sometimes feels out of tone. Like when Maggie and crew dead serious about taking Georgie and her bodyguards captive and they break out with the silly discussion about made up words. Moisture? What? In a Tarantino scene, it would be funny, but here it just felt like it came out of nowhere and tonally wasn't right for the scene.
Yeah, and we didn't get her feedback, but she mentioned in the comments that she didn't like this episode too much, the one we're about to discuss. I really would have liked to have heard your take on it. So hopefully, Lara, you will get a chance and send it in, and we'll discuss it just like we did just now next week. All right. So now it's time for Do Not Send Us Ashtrays. you know what? I blame Malika. She's the one that put that in there on the feedback. And ever since that, well, I had thought of it too, but ever since then, I was like compelled to say it that way. But and don't send any strays. Although you should send strays because they need to be rescued. So
definitely, come on. Every dog needs a home.
Yeah, both of our dog and our cat are both rescues. So, all right. Seriously, now you're probably saying that, listeners. Say, Brian, you're goofing off too much this time. Season 8, Episode 13 is titled Do Not Send Us Astray. Written by future showrunner of The Walking Dead and current co-executive producer, Angela Kang, and co-executive producer, and I don't know if his title is going to be changing next season, Matthew Negrete. And I know a lot of people get his name wrong, but it rhymes with spaghetti. And that was given to us on Talking Dead by Gimple himself. Directed by, I believe he's normally a cameraman. I've seen him play different roles. I think he's been cinematographer as well. And Jeffrey F. January, and I'll throw this in. This guy's name is mentioned in the lawsuit with Darabont. I have read a good portion of those nasty correspondences that went out in the summer, and there was one part where Darabont thought that Jeffrey was not very good at his work, and obviously that's I think not true because well, he directed a pretty good episode, I think. So anyway, I bet you no other podcast said that this week. So anyway, all right. So out of 10, what did you think of Do Not Send Us Astray?
I give this 9 out of 10 hidden walkers chomping on you from behind. This was a great episode for me. We were finally getting the action we all have been wanting this whole season. I love the action, and finally, we're seeing all the whole action between saviors and Rick and the gang. And I'm going to keep using that word, Grickinagang, because it just reminds, even though it sounds disco-y, I had to put it in. And I just think of it from Robot Chicken, and I just constantly think of that.
Like Cool in the Gang?
So that's, yeah. Yeah, he describes himself in Robot Chicken. At the end, he goes, oh, you got the Saviors, you got the Wolves. Yeah, what about Grickinagang? So, you know, I thought that was pretty cute and pretty funny. So,
well, for my rating this week, I am going to pay tribute to Jason and Karen from the Walking Dead cast, who I think we can safely say are friends of this podcast, even though we're on separate networks. And they use something in their episode this week that they've used from time to time called the Department of the Suspension of Disbelief. So I wanted to pay tribute to that in a very fitting episode. I loved this episode, but I'm going to criticize the heck out of it, if that makes any sense at all. 9.8 disbelief suspensions. So to me, it was the best of the season, without a doubt. It had everything a fan wants, a real fan wants, including canon retcons, things you need to forgive, and of course, stuff you want to argue about.
Bullshit!
So I already know that there are a lot of people out there that are going to eviscerate this episode. And I didn't listen to them. I just can't do it anymore. I used to listen to Walking Dead all the time, and they've gone so negative that I can't listen to them a lot of times, or I have to work up to it. And I read on their headline this week saying that it was one of the bottom five episodes of the series. And I strongly disagree. It wasn't perfect and it had some huge issues, but I still loved it. I'm forgiving just about all of it, crazy as that is. All right. Well, we've got some listener ratings.
PB and Zane, or Judy, gives it 8 out of 10 Carol's Confessions.
Steve Brown says, I'm really hating the term retcon. 7 out of 10 Hilltop Slumber Parties.
Dieta Patterson, I give this episode 9 out of 10. The Widow is Gunning for You, and she ain't playing.
No, she ain't. Glynis Goltz gives it 8 out of 10 Hooters.
I love that restaurant.
I haven't figured out what that is referring to, actually, in this case, because there definitely isn't a Hooters in the zombie apocalypse. So,
yeah. Cheryl Fox says 9 out of 10. You know what it is.
Gary gave this episode 7 out of 10. Where's Negan's? As in, where's Waldo's? maybe she's referring to the horns at the start.
It's got to be. I think Glynis was regarding everybody honking their horns, and then with Daryl with the air horn.
That's what's got to be. All right. Well, we think we figured it out. But it is time for Awesome Sauce. Awesome Sauce! PB and Zane says, the Jesus Michonne Walker kill. I loved it. Yeah, that was actually a good one. I love the assist.
Steve Brown, that Jesus Michonne kill, Maggie's leadership skills.
That one fits right. It fit into the previous one and it fits into this one. Dieta Patterson says, Maggie all over this episode. Loved it.
Glynis Goltz, good action plan, comic shout out by the survivors to bring the saviors out into the open and nail most of them. Classy Jesus May Jerry and Michonne Def de Cardana. Move deaded Walker. Sorry, my French is off.
Yeah. Gary has some awesome sauce as well. He says that Maggie seemed like she really wasn't going to shoot the prisoners, but just used it as a ploy. And that seems like the prisoners who didn't run might be accepted into the group. Also, the cleverly devised plan to let Negan's soldiers get close, then turn on the headlights, and also have people waiting in the direction they would run. All right. Cheryl Fox says, the whole Walker Tobin attack on the house was awesome. When they showed him breathing, nope, he isn't breathing. Oh, crap, somebody wake up. Why is it so quiet and so dark? All those people in the house? No! Yeah, to that, I have to say, it was in my awesome sauce, so I'll just pull it out of here to say that Walker Tobin, that dude was scary.
Yeah.
He was big, and he could obviously use his Walker strength to, overpower just about anyone else. Of course, Carol, wiry Carol, was able to get him. But, I mean, he was scary, like I say. I don't know how tall Jason Douglas is in real life, but that's about the tallest zombie. Like, not just tall, but big. He's like a big guy, too. So, yeah. He was pretty scary.
And He actually reminded me of the initial zombie you see in the original Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, very tall and very menacing, and he comes in out of the shadows and biting those people. So it was very reminiscent and going back to that. So I think they went with that film choice to make the zombies a little bit more menacing now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I might as well finish with my final awesome sauce, which is basically best act one ever. I really loved the first act of the episode. It was pretty long. That's when the battle occurred and the stand down and everything. So that was tense. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. You have two awesome sauce, Mark?
Yeah. Sadiq coming into his own. It's a new character and a new personality, and he's actually showing some sort of presence and fortitude, especially with the way he kind of shut down that new doctor that I think is going to be a red shirt soon enough. And then Daryl having a proper conversation in this episode for once in a long time. Oh my God, thank God they give him dialogue. And he talks with Tara. That was awesome for the fact that, she points out about how she was with the governor, and then, that Merle was with the governor at one point too. And he just was basically saying how it went on, Merle always went on his own way. And, if he didn't wise up just like Tara did, they would have been just like the saviors or even with the saviors at this point. So I thought that was a good discussion. It was something that was needed in the actual story. It didn't really need to be told because a lot of people already knew it in some way, but you needed that confrontation between Daryl and Tara regarding that.
Yeah. And it's worth saying too, like Tara, obviously with Tara getting shot, Daryl saw Dwight take the shot, but he doesn't know what we suspect. And that is that Dwight's arrows were not poisoned. I mean, we have no way to know that absolutely for certain, but we do have a lot of, well, it's a pretty good bet, put it that way, that she's not going to get sick. So, that's not even using any comic spoilers. That's just based on what we see, because everyone by that time had gotten sick and she hadn't, right? Mm. And we know that she got hit by Dwight's arrow. It wasn't Simon. It wasn't somebody else. It was Dwight. And I don't think Tara knows that it was Dwight. So, some of the things that she says in that one conversation, in the room after, they come back and that one two-liner hilltop guy who hadn't turned yet that, you know, karma, she said karma's a bitch. And I think she's going to find out that, that it's not, at least not in this case. So, all right. Let's move on to the week variety.
You're worthless and weak.
PB and Zane, Tara standing up for Dwight. Come on, writers, make up your mind.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, especially when I kind of fitting right in with what I was just talking about, that Tara Daryl conversation, and then at the end with Tara, she was like hardcore, you know, not forgiving, then hardcore forgiving, then hardcore not forgiving, then hardcore forgiving again. it's very you know, flippy floppy. So I agree. Steve Brown says the whole weapons dipped in guts will be talked about enough. Henry getting a gun and the key to the cage. I might have been able to buy one of those, but both is too much. Yeah, I had this in my weak sauce. How did he get the key?
Yeah, it is a good question. I never actually saw it. All I know is I saw him take the rifle.
Yeah, we see him take the. Was it a rifle or a machine gun?
Probably a semi-automatic rifle. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. We see him get the gun, but we definitely don't see him get the keys. And, you know, he may have gotten the keys just as, you know, just before things started really hitting the fan there. But still, it made you wonder, like, I thought it was kind of stretching it myself, Steve. So I agree with you. All right, next.
Dieta Patterson, Karate Kid Jr., who opened the pen and let the saviors out? I'm with Steve. How in the hell did he manage to get both the keys and gun? And why is he still asking who killed his brother? I thought they told him it was Gavin. Did I miss something? Did somebody tell him it wasn't Gavin? Just a complete waste of episode space. Just like Gregory trying to reason with them to get out. Ugh. Why is he still breathing? I don't know what it is, and I don't think anybody else knows what it is. Morgan seeing Gavin's ghost repeating? You know what it is. What is that? Some code just between them? Was this something else I missed? I would have preferred Morgan to be screaming clear, at least. I know what that is. Gavin's ghost was very irritating. I understand they were trying to show Morgan's struggle with killing, but jeesh, Maggie Rhee is awesome as a leader. Hope we don't lose her.
Yeah, to that, I have to say.
You know what it is.
Yeah, you know what it is. Do you know what it is?
I think it's somewhere inside Morgan's brain somewhere, and that's why he runs to fear.
You were supposed to. I think that's him telling himself that he was supposed to kill his wife. And you know what it is probably cowardice. I don't know. It's just a guess, but I think that comes back to, you know, things we learned during Clear and, you know, during the Eastman episode, Here's Not Here. And here we are again. So
maybe that's why they're shipping them off to fear. They don't want to have all that old baggage.
I don't know. We'll see. I loved you calling him Karate Kid Jr. That was hysterical. That was really funny, Dieta. I laughed out loud when I read it. To that end, speaking of Henry, Glynnis says, Henry, stay in the house. Yeah, speaking of that, Henry, you know, all you had to do was stay out of trouble.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it!
You blew it. You had it all and you blew it.
Indeed. He blew it. He really blew it, actually. You know, like I heard on another podcast, somebody say, a gun can shoot through a barbed wire fence. So why did you even get in there? Anyway, that kid's just completely out of control. So where do you think his end is? Do you think we're going to end up seeing Zombie Henry? Or, you know, is he going to like mow down the rest of the escape saviors? Actually, that would be fitting, but, I would love to see him kill, what's his name? Jared.
Jared, yeah.
Yeah.
No, my feeling is that we saw at the very end that they all were looking for Henry. He kind of disappeared from what looked like to me was a storm shelter, like, you know, the Bilko doors and a house. And they thought that he was down there. No. Nope. And then they said, well, he kind of disappeared and this is where he was and he's gone now. So I have a funny feeling he ran after all those saviors that were running out of the fence. And there's some sort of altercation that has happened. And I don't think it did well for little Henry.
Yeah.
Whether or not they show it or not on the show in the next episode, who knows? Because there's a lot of things that we are thought to have seen, but we haven't seen.
Yeah.
It's one of those where it's like they're foreshadowing certain events. You knew that Henry was going to go in there and do something when Carol said, if you go out there, you're going to get killed.
Yeah.
So what does he do? He goes out to the he goes out and confronts the saviors in the prison area. But and then he winds up disappearing at the end.
Yeah.
Same thing. You know, it's like we did not know what was going on with Negan at that time. And at the very end, wow, what happened at the very end? So a lot of there's a little bit of foreshadowing either from previous episodes or within the episode itself.
Yeah.
So I have a funny feeling we're going to get this the next episode or probably at the end of the next episode of what happened to Henry. But, you know, we only have so many episodes left.
Only three more.
Yeah. So.
And Glynis has a second weak sauce. She says, surprised. Okay. So this is a comic spoiler. And this also kind of wraps into something I said earlier. Surprised they gave Tara Rick's comic story plot line with getting hit by the crossbow bolt. There goes my theory of red-eyed Rick against the tree, unless they do a duplication. But I doubt it, as that'll play out differently now with that red-eyed Rick scene in The Wrath, Season 8, Episode 16. And if you don't understand that, that is the title of Season 8, Episode 16, which I believe is the first time that The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead have episodes with the same title. So, because Season 2, Episode 14, I think, was titled Wrath. That's the one where Travis kills the Brotastic Bros, if you recall. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. And earlier in the season, we had Monsters, where in Fear, there was an episode titled Monster. So that was close, but not quite. Anyway, enough trivial title descriptions. As far as the red-eyed Rick scene, will now most probably be with Negan, since Negan in this episode is nowhere to be seen and is off, quote unquote, studying art with Jada somewhere. And spoiler, you know, if you don't want to hear what's coming next week, there is AMC has released a little 2-minute scene from next week. And we definitely will be seeing those two. So, in the next episode. So in a scene that for listeners that have been listening to us, you know, since they first came on the scene, I of course have not liked the Trash People. And after seeing that, I strangely rooted for her.
That's not true. That's a impossible.
It is true. I can't even believe it's true, but it is. So, yeah. So if you don't mind, you know, being, you know, seeing a sneak peek from the next episode, I would go on YouTube and watch it. All right. Gary's next. He says that there was no indication of where it's Negan in this episode or where Jadis has taken him. That is definitely popular. This episode. Also that Henry made such an unnecessary and stupid decision to unlock the pen and go inside. Amen to that. He could have questioned the prisoners just as easily through the wire fence.
Cheryl Fox. Tara and Daryl comparing notes about Dwight is my weak sauce. We know there are those for and against him. Get over it or resolve it. It was also lame that all of a sudden Rick realized what caused everyone to turn.
Was it? Well, maybe this is a good time to bring it because this goes into a weak sauce that I have. I mean, doesn't this seriously severely stretch or break the previously set TWD canon? Because, you know, we'd never seen this happen before. Fear, and on this show we've seen them get Walker guts, you know, we've seen them being cut with knives that have been slathered in Walker guts, and yet I mentioned thank you as an example, and yet for some reason now they're getting sick. It seems like a well-placed something about it, like, you know, gee, this never used to happen before. Why is it happening now? Kind of thing would be appropriate here and would shut down the canon police and those with part of the nitpicker society. Because, you know, I mentioned it before, but there's definitely, it's there for the picking, no pun intended, with this one. Because, you know, we didn't see them do that. Now, I will say this at this point. Is the intention here to fix canon, or is it to basically make it the way that it should have been in the first place? So it was basically mistakes that had been done in previous productions, in previous seasons, that made this break canon. So, you know what I mean? Like, I think maybe this was the original intention, but some things happened in shooting that they weren't really paying attention to guts on blood and whatnot in the past. And that's why. So it's not that they've changed it to make, and they're doing something else because they just want to change it. They're trying to set it to the way that it's supposed to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, it does make sense for the fact that they're trying to right a wrong that they didn't really continue to use in previous seasons, because this was brought up. There was a few times, like there was Lori at one point searching, oh, were you scratched? Did they bite you, or did they scratch you and whatever? Even with a slight scratch, apparently early on in the actual apocalypse when it first started, she was worried about Carl, and when Carl and Sophia were attacked by the walker that was in the camp right before Daryl came out going, hey, come on, man, you know what's right, and then she shoots him in the head. You got to shoot him in the head. Lori was checking them for scratches, making sure they were okay. So at one point, it was all about checking for scratches, bruises, scrapes, or anything that would get infected. So apparently that was something that was implemented then, but they never have gone back to. Then we also have a tainted meat boy.
Oh, Bob.
You're eating Bob. Bob was screaming out, you ate tainted meat. He was bitten, and on top of that, at that time you had those people that were from Terminus that were eating his cooked leg, and they were like, well, we cooked him, so it should be all right. They have not even gone back to that. Plus, we've seen Ezekiel feed the dead to the pigs, and we've not seen or heard about the saviors dying or getting turned in any way by eating dead flesh that was consumed by pigs.
Yeah.
So they're trying to retcon, and I hate that term too, because a lot of people use it in every other fandom.
Yeah.
But they're trying to go back to it to make it a point that this is also a weapon. So this is all something that's going to come play probably in another season or the next season possibly. So those are my thoughts.
Well, I will say this, you know, the way that it has worked in the past, canon or not canon. Canon is a word that gets thrown out about a lot on my Star Trek podcast. And I hear this term a lot too, headcanon. Don't ever say that to me. I cannot stand that term. It is not canon if you're making up stuff, if you're filling in the blanks. That is speculation. It is not headcanon. Don't use the word canon in it. I guess I'm old school. You know, I'm showing my age. But, you know, you young whippersnappers might, you know, use that. I got attitude. What can I say? I got fired last week. So actually, it was 2 weeks ago. Two episodes ago. But anyway, so you brought up some great points about Bob. I mean, maybe something happens to the zombie virus after you've died. So like eating a body that has not died, maybe that leg wasn't infected. I mean, he didn't get bit in the leg. He got bit in the shoulder, if I remember correctly. So maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Oh, well, maybe they should actually start considering eating everybody else who gets bit and just take all the good bits.
There you go. And maybe the pigs somehow were able to filter it out. Maybe the pigs are the cure to the zombie contagion. Who knows? Maybe all they have to do is just feed them to the pigs, and the pigs will their poop will be zombie virus free. I don't know, but
and then bring out the flowers so that Carol could point to them for the kids.
Yeah, Henry, we got a nice little bouquet for you at this point. So another point that we're basically into our own weak sauce at this point, and you know, I mentioned before that there's a lot of things that I can do to criticize this. No one woke up. I mean, the whole, and especially a guy like Tobin, I would not think big, strong Tobin would be also silent Tobin, stealthy Tobin. Cause that one guy, he didn't even know it until the guy was right upon him. And same with, Dr. Dana. And by the way, that was the doctor. And it was, by the way, the aforementioned and never seen doctor from the kingdom. You could tell that for two things that were in the episode, even though they didn't specifically identify her as that. She had on the chest protector. That's a dead giveaway for her being a kingdom person. And yeah. I think the guy's name was Kurt. He was the guy that fell down the stairs as a walker. He identified her as Dr. Dana. So the one that was given Sadiq a lot of guff. Attitude, a lot of guff, that was Dr. Dana. And Dr. Dana did not have a good bedside manner, it seemed. So.
Yeah, it's funny too, because you talk about how people can't wake up, but I'm a sound sleeper. I'm pretty much one of those people that, you know, you literally have to push and roll over and wake up. So I'd be dead.
Yeah.
In that case.
Do you have any weak sauce? You don't have anything listed there, so.
No, I really didn't have much to complain at all, really, about this episode.
Yeah, and it's funny because all these things that I'm bringing up are things that did not impair my enjoyment of the episode, but I had to acknowledge them because I don't like being accused of being a fanboy or being ignorant or stupid or whatever. If I see something, I'm going to call it out. But at the same time, I'm just explaining. Yes, they were things that annoyed me, but they didn't affect my enjoyment of the episode. They're still worth mentioning. Okay, so The one thing I thought that was really a stretch too was how quick they all got sick and turned. Now, what I mean by the turning part was you had people who weren't even showing sickness, and we had just seen Carl. It seemed to take a long time for his bite to finally, take his life. And yet you have these people that seem to be injured but not sick, and they go to bed, and somehow between, sundown and what was it?
It was 3:26 in the morning.
Yeah, it was 3:26 when he resurrected, and his first attack, but it was, I think, 2 something when he died. So, like, how is it possible for and not just one or two, but almost all of these people get sick and die in such a short amount of time, considering they didn't appear to be sick before?
Well, they were showing fevers. Tobin showed a fever, and the person next to him that was in the cot was showing a fever. They showed in the very beginning of the episode the girl with the funky hair that went all zombie inside the actual Savior prison that Maggie made.
Yeah.
So they've been sick for a while, but I'm attributing this to almost like that weird sickness that they got in that one season when that kid went rogue and turned zombie and started killing people in the middle of the night in the prison. And then they all were turning soon after they were bitten and eaten to death and then turned into zombies themselves. So that was an overnight occurrence too. So this is a reoccurring thing. So these people were shot probably 5 to 6 hours before, but it was a rush because maybe the zombie guts were dipped or the arrows were dipped in the zombie guts and it infected them, and it just exacerbated whatever was already, because you have to keep in mind that they're all infected.
Yeah.
It just needs that one contagion to get them to trigger, and then it just makes it even far worse. It makes them sick, really ill, real quick, and then they die. Whereas a bite takes a little longer, and we saw that with Carl. We saw that with the guy in the RV in the first season, and a few others too.
Yeah. Oh crap! What's his name? Jim. I knew it was a one syllable word or one syllable name. I just couldn't remember which one it was. Yeah, Jim was the one that turned. So, yeah, you think the zombie bite actually takes longer to infect?
I think the zombie bite itself, if it's not too extreme, like where with Carl, you saw it just like teeth marks on the arm on his abdomen. Same thing with Jim. It was just teeth marks.
Okay.
So it wasn't anything where they were ripping flesh and getting their guts into it. Whereas some of the people had knives and machetes and arrows with the zombie blood, the guts on it, where when they were in combat, they were fighting, it would open up a wound. That stuff would get in, and it would get in and even more so, even trigger more so faster. Right. In my opinion, that was just my thought. That was what I was thinking that would happen, because that whole prison scene with that kid, and he dies in the middle of the night, wakes up as a zombie, and then he starts chewing down on people, and you see the guy's guts spill out after he ate him out through, and then that person turns because they're pretty much dead, because pretty much they bled out and he ripped out his throat and chewed on his stomach. But they turned really quick from being dead to a zombie. So
yeah, I mean, I'm not the turning. We know from season one, from TS-19, that it can happen anywhere from a couple of minutes to 8 hours. I think was the the longest that Jenner said.
Yeah, from the point of death.
Right, from the point of death. So, you know, that part of it I didn't have any problems with. It was the actual quickness to dying there. And okay, so now I have to bring in this part that I don't want to talk about here. How does this correlate with Father Gabriel? I mean, why is he not? Well, I think eventually he would die, but we see that antibiotics actually successfully was treating him. And I don't know if he'll get his sight back, but it certainly seemed to be the progression had stopped. But that's the big question there I have is, does this mean that if Dr. Dana knew where Dr. Carson stashed the antibiotics, that all of those people could have been saved?
No, my theory about the way Father Gabriel happened with when he was with Negan, I think he got some of the goop in his eye and it became an irritation. I don't, or got into his mouth in some way. And since there is no wound or anything, this is just something that's been imbibed in some way through either the eyes, the mouth, the nose, who knows? And it became some sort of an irritation where it sparked something, where it's almost like the disease is starting to manifest itself to a point, but it can be treated with, you know, antibiotics and things like that, where it's like almost like a virus. But we didn't see any open wound on Father Gabriel.
Right. Well, and, you know, maybe that's the difference between, say, ingesting it and it going in your bloodstream. I don't know, but it still doesn't explain to me how antibiotics could treat him unless he got sick from something other than the zombie virus or whatever it is.
Well, I have to say this. Negan did said, he goes, you know, I did rub one out in that corner where you're sitting.
That's just wrong. Shame on you, Negan. Anyway, I have one more weak sauce, and this does not go to the actual episode. And, you know, okay, so we just spent a lot of time criticizing it, but I'm still telling you, I love the episode. I still think it was the best of the season. I really do mean that 9.8. It's just like each of these little things were like 0.02 off the score, I guess. But this last thing, I have to blame AMC. And Mark, you were a victim of this, I know.
Yep.
The way that it appeared in the guides of, you know, the various, you know, however you get your AMC channel, it was showing that this episode was a 2-hour episode. And instead, what it was is, you know, the first hour of the Terror premiere. But it, when you looked at it on your screen, it in the guide, it said that it was still playing The Walking Dead. So a bunch of people DVR'd and got the first hour of the Terror when they didn't want it. And I don't know. It's these shady tactics for you know, trying to get people to watch the show. You know, I wish that they would stop that kind of stuff and just let the episodes, you know, speak for themselves. I didn't have a problem really with it, you know, playing after The Walking Dead, because I was interested in the show. Notice I said was, but this, you know, this is the kind of thing that just annoys the viewers. So, AMC, I have to give you a weak sauce for your shady tactics yet again. All right. Well, now it's time for sad sauce. We have a few of those. Aww. Mark, why don't you give yours?
My sad sauce is Tobin, Henry, And not seeing what Jadis did to Negan because of that damn last scene.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to see. But I, like I said, I think we will definitely see what's going on next episode there. Like poor Tobin, you know, Tobin's been the butt of jokes for, I know some podcasts, they make fun of Tobin, but I like Tobin and, you know, it's sad to see him go. I guess, you know, the one that I'm still shocked that he's still on the show is Scott, you know, who's, Kendrick Green. And if you don't know, that name, that is, the other, he was out with, Heath when in season six, they're out on a run and came in. He was the other, you know, black guy, and, you know, he's bald head. We occasionally see him, but, you know, he has a line here and there. But he is the husband of Sonequa Martin Green. And every time I see him, I keep thinking his time is numbered because, you know, she's not there anymore and she's quite busy these days. So, yeah. We have another sad sauce from PB and Zane. She says, Maggie saying she wanted Negan dead. Poor Maggie.
Aww.
Poor Maggie. We also got some what sauce.
What?
Steve Brown says, we got nothing of Jadis and Negan. So I guess you gave it a sad for that, and Steve gave it a what.
Cheryl Fox, what is that Morgan knows?
Well, you know what it is. You were supposed to
what?
Like I said earlier, I think it's supposed to kill Jenny. His Jenny. Yeah, Jenny, also known as Mrs. Morgan Jones, I guess. All right. Well, it is time for our regular feedback.
Bullshit!
No, seriously, Simon.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Mark, why don't you start it off?
PB and Zane. For the most part, I like the episode. Maggie hearing from the guy how she doesn't rule like it's about her the way Gregory ruled. Just after she confessed it was. Ouch. Carol's man is turned. Oh, geez. And he gets the doc? That's one more down. For sure, you don't want to be a doctor in a zombie apocalypse. Why didn't no one think about this and have someone watching? Stupid kid lets all Negan's guys out. Guess this stuff has to happen. If it didn't, we wouldn't have to show it, and it would have all been over with years ago. It was great watching Rick, Daryl, and Morgan taking down walkers, just like the old times.
Yeah, I think your point, Judy, is that, yeah, if these stupid things didn't happen, you wouldn't have a show. and you know, some of the things like I didn't mention it in my weak sauce, but like Simon's tactics there when they go into the hilltop, like when they're actually, you know, cross the fence, both, you know, when they first get in there, and then when they start, you know, oh, everything's quiet. Oh, let's go attack them in the house. You know, it's like, what did you think was going to happen? You dope. And that is kind of funny because Simon, and it's funny, Lara mentioned it in her feedback for last week's episode, how Simon is basically the clever guy that Negan wasn't. And he still wasn't very clever in this case, you know, on this night. The only thing that did seem to work was Negan's, you know, crazy as it is, Negan's little plan seemed to work, you know, but Simon's tactics did not in the least. And, the other thing I was going to say about that is that you have to wonder, though, is it intellect that's lacking, or is it just an overabundance of arrogance? Because if anything, I think we have to admit that the saviors are very arrogant. Like, they think that people are just going to roll over and do what they say. And, you know, something Rick said last episode, like, someone was bound to resist. And, you know, that's why I've said many times that I think the saviors, you know, economic system, if you want to call it that, is fundamentally flawed. It can't work, would never work, because it's all, you know, a protection racket. You can't run the entire economy in a protection racket. It doesn't work that way. I know they tried to do it in, A Piece of the Action. I don't remember what episode that was, but it was in the original series where this planet got some Chicago Mobs of the 20s book, and they emulated the Chicago mob scene. It's just funny, though. I really went off the deep end there, but it's just another example of a society that is fundamentally flawed. It could never long-term exist this way. Things have to stabilize. And I guess, you know, that's kind of what Georgie symbolizes, but, you know, the future. Anyway, Steve says, I really liked this episode, but took off points for the walkers turning and no one waking up until it was too late. Yeah, I have to agree there. I have to agree.
Deanna Patterson. Okay, now my rant. Maybe it's just me, but why are they constantly pushing this no killing struggle on everyone? Rick, Maggie, Morgan, all struggling with should they kill? During this war, Negan and his people have killed so many of our people without blinking an eye. Negan says it's to keep people in line, but we all know that's a crap. Why are people constantly contemplating if they're doing the right thing? Maggie shouldn't be thinking of if going after Negan is selfish. Rick shouldn't be thinking if he will be dishonoring Carl's wishes if he killed Negan. And Morgan shouldn't be struggling with the to kill or not to kill. I never understood why. Negan and the saviors are a threat and need to be eliminated, point blank. Maggie or Rick shouldn't be thinking they are less of a leader for going after Negan and the saviors. Overall, it was a good episode with lots of action. Demise of Simon is vastly approaching. Oh yeah, Dwight shot Tara to save her from being hit by Simon Walker Guts' weapons. We never saw Dwight use the Walker Guts on his arrows, so Tara will live to fight another fight.
Thanks, Dieta. That's some great feedback this week. Yeah, the whole everyone's struggling, and I have to point out, and he had such a small role in this episode, Jesus, because, you know, Jesus wants to save people, doesn't he? Because Jesus is good. And Jesus felt proud of himself. What I mean by that little point was that I noticed when the five or six former saviors were, you know, trying to shut the gate, I saw Jesus look at Maggie, and it was kind of like, you know, see, some of them are good. Did you pick that up? Because I certainly did.
No, I did not pick that.
Yeah. All right. Glynis is next. She says, the sleepers in the mansion, some of whom turned into walkers, had the vibes of past episodes. Yeah, I thought that too, and so did you, Mark. Season 4, episode 2, Infected, and season 4, episode 5, Internment, when the survivors battled that infection. Then in season 5, episode 12, Remember, where the survivors piled into the living room in the same house for the first night in Alexandria. Yeah, to a much different result.
Yeah, true.
And aside, while watching Formula One from Melbourne, Australia this weekend, I see a part of the racetrack has been commemorated after a Formula One Grand Prix promoter, Ron Walker, with the wording Walker Straight.
Cool.
That is a deep cut.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cheryl Fox, Carol is very blunt with Henry. I feel no one is watching him, and after what he did to Gavin, maybe they should. Don't we remember what happened with Lizzie? And why did they bring another character, Nurse Dana, to yell at Sadiq instead of having Maggie or Daryl or Rosita even to question what he knows? Then they kill off the nurse. I did like Daryl coming in on the motorcycle with guns blazing. That was pretty cool. Let me know if I am being pricky. But when Maggie walked around the house showing all the people were sleeping, she said something about conserving the generators. Then we see that an electric digital clock was showing the time. Good pickup. Am I supposed to believe there is a battery in the clock? Maybe, and maybe I am being a little bit picky.
You know, and this reminds me of something I pointed out, and I had thought of that. It seems that The Walking Dead has some kind of magical LED clock that is available in this universe, because Eugene had a similar clock in the sanctuary that, you know, all the power was out, yet the clock was still showing time. And, everyone, you know, knows those old, you know, those old digital alarm clocks. It's kind of funny saying old digital, but it's true. I mean, I had one at least 30 years ago. They have a place to put a battery, and the battery just keeps the time if the power goes out, but you don't see it. Or if you do, it's so dim that things would have to be like pitch dark to be able to see it. It's you know, lit so dimly that, you know, it's not supposed to be seen, really. So we already talked about this, Cheryl, but that was a doctor, not Dana was a doctor, not a nurse. And I originally thought that she was a nurse, but then I went back and started thinking about the fact that we hadn't met the doctor from the kingdom yet. And then that one guy, and I don't know if his name was ever used, but I did look it up, and the character's name was Kurt, the one that was saying that Gregory would have never done what Maggie did, you know, that he was just, you know, out for himself. That, to me, is also showed that, you know, because he definitely specifically called her Dr. Dana. So, and I looked at that on the screen, the closed captions. So, yeah. So I guess Sadiq is the only doctor in the entire world.
the most practicing attendant at this moment.
Yeah. We also got some feedback from Gary. He says, what is with Morgan's illusion? Just what is his illusion referring to? Any ideas? Well, we kind of gave some ideas earlier. About Rick's cut, did it ever get tended to? And is there a reason they focused on it a couple of times? What do you think about that? You think that has to do with the wound on his side that we're going to see? Or was it just, what do you think?
My thoughts are, Sadiq had brought it up, and Sadiq goes, oh, you need that wound to be attended to. Same thing as what Michonne had stated. I had stated this previously on one of our podcasts about how he had a a wound on his hand. It was very bloody. I thought it, at one point it was a knife through it. It wasn't, from what I could see. I've watched it several times, but it's not. But it's the wound that he's talking about is on his side, and he has not been tending to it.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he's been covering it up. If you watch him, he's actually covering it up with a jacket.
Hmm.
You don't see it. So I don't think he was bit, but I think he was definitely wounded from the fight in some way, whether it be from Negan. I don't even know if this is from Negan or from the actual fight itself. I'm thinking it was from Negan from when they were fighting, and that there was that whole little battle royale between Rick and Negan, and that what was it, like a little bunker or something like that, where he threw the axe.
They fell into a basement, I think.
Yeah, but he threw the axe, and then he had him as, you know, he was ready to chop his hand off, and then Negan falls. But I think it came from that actual that little battle that Negan and Rick had, and he just has not been tending to it. But it's just going to be a consistent open wound that's going on, which if you look at the episode 16 for Wrath, I think that's that whole ending scene that we keep getting pushed in our face of him sitting under the tree with the stained windows around, hanging around, and laying there kind of looking kind of drawn with his eyes crying. So something's going on with that. That might be utilized. Like I said, there's a lot of foreshadowing in the show. And that's one of those things, because they're kind of pointing it out. Michonne points it out, and Sadiq points it out as far as tending to that wound. So something's going on. It's like he just is refusing help, but is continuing on, but yet he's still bleeding out in some way. So I don't know. I don't think he'll, you know, I don't think he's going to die.
Right.
I don't think at all he's going to die. I think it's just going to be one of those things where he's going to come to a realization of what Carl was pointing out to on his episode for Honor. So, but that's just my thoughts.
He's got a couple more points here. He says, about Dwight, is he just staying with Negan's group as an undercover spy or what? I think he is an undercover spy. And I think, you know, once it's revealed that Tira is not infected, I think it'll be obvious, but you know,
yeah,
how that's going to play out, I don't know. We may have to. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Tara next episode. So,
well, I have a funny feeling if we don't see Tara, but we do see Dwight, and we do see Dwight and Daryl at the same time, there's going to be some sort of confrontation, because Daryl definitely has his sights set on Dwight.
Also, nothing new on the new people they met last episode, or any more on the mysterious helicopter. Isn't it strange there never yet has more talk among Rink's group as to wondering where the helicopter came from? Well, I don't think anyone but Rick saw it. And, you know, since Rick has had a past with a helicopter, he may not have even told anybody. Right?
So, true. It's like that. It's like Morales calling him, "Hey, helicopter boy."
Exactly. Exactly. Which he should have called him helicopter boy in the episodes that he was in. It would have been nice.
And those were only two after that. But which I actually want to point out too, Morales was actually in the mist with he was in there as well as Melissa McBride, Lori Holden, Jeffrey DeMunn. So he was in there. He was one of the army guys. So I just watched that the other night, which I was like, wait a minute, Morales is in this one too? So apparently he was a Darabont person.
All right. Well, that is it for our feedback from listeners. So what do you have, Mark? Anything additional you want to bring up?
The only thing additional I have is the whole idea of this whole retcon thing. I know, Steve Brown, who works with me on my other podcast, and he's been sending in information as well on ours here. But he hates the idea of this whole retcon thing. What is this retcon? I'm not a fan of it, but it seems that they have to bring back something to make it more pronounced in what's going on in the current events. I'm not happy with it. It's like we keep going backwards and forwards. And then what's with... go ahead.
I think part of it is the execution of the retcon. It's like I say, you know, just a character's confusion of why is this happening now? We've never seen this before. To me, that fixes the problem. It's one line of dialogue, and that makes the viewer say, oh, they are acknowledging this too, that this is different. And yet I don't know why they do this. And I have something to say about this in a minute here, but I'll let you finish your train of thought.
Well, here's something to add to your thought. A friend of mine, she just started binge watching the show.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, she knows what we do, and she started listening to our podcast as well as the other one that we listen to as well. And she really wanted to get into it, so her husband doesn't like it. So she has to watch it when he's not there. So she asks me all these questions, and she goes, I just binge watched like 7 seasons, and now I'm catching up and I'm seeing all this stuff come back. What's with all this comeback? So I think it's for the binge watch viewers that are out there that haven't been watching the show, or since the show has been on for what? We're going on 8 years.
Right.
So now you have newer viewers, and those people are binge watching as well. Plus that you have to take into effect that there are viewers who are like you and I, where we've been there since day one, and we've been watching, and we kind of take those particular stories or what happened to this one particular character very, very to heart, you know, very much to heart. And then, then you get the occasional viewers, and I think a lot of the occasional viewers are getting lost at this point. They're like, well, what's this whole thing? And they're not happy with it. Because they've been sitting on a continuous story for so long, and then they're going to go backwards now.
Yeah.
So that's the confusing element for a lot of people. It's like, well, it was there, and you and I would say this. Well, it was there. Now they're just bringing it back to make some sort of forward continuity with the show or improve on a story. So I think the reason why they're doing this whole retcon thing is to bring a little bit more drama, bring more of the viciousness of what the zombies represent. Before they, in the very beginning, they were considered the main antagonist. This is what our group was trying to escape, and then eventually turned to people, and then the people became more of a focus, and then we kind of strayed where the zombies were just a background element. Now they're becoming more prominent, or an element to being more destructive in their life. So I think they're utilizing that. But, I can understand everybody's being unhappy with a little bit of the retcon. I'm a little bit backwards and forwards myself, but, we need this.
Robot dance? Is that you?
Yeah, pretty much. Do, 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 do.
Yeah.
Well, and then the only thing other I could add would be the whole thing was with Jadis and her new digs and the teaser trailer. You know, that to me was amazing, and I give you props for like saying, hey, wow, I'm interested now, because it's like she went from a dress to putting a hair in a ponytail and showing an area where she apparently is living, which is completely clean, looks like something out of a catalog, and then dealing with Negan. And I really want to see what that story is.
I mean, the Jadis thing, that's all, you know, stuff that we're going to see next week. I'm not sad that we didn't see. I would have liked to have seen Negan, but I don't think we needed to address that episode or that story in this. Was enough there. I'm confident with the, you know, little sneak peek that they released that we're going to see a lot of that story. So I As I said, I'm so shocked that I may actually be rooting for her character. I feel like, you know, someone has taken over my body or something. And it's a body snatcher kind of thing. Well, I think every show that has been around a while has a ravenous, you know, kind of fan base. Game of Thrones has gone through it. It is going through it. Walking Dead has been going through it now for several seasons. And since I'm doing a Star Trek podcast, I can also tell you that Trekkies have the same thing. And that is how there's a percentage of the fans that just go over everything with a fine tooth comb. And there are people that are gatekeepers, people that this is especially true in Star Trek, where they have their belief of what Trek canon is. And if anything deviates, then they raise a fit. And I think to a much lesser extent, you see this in The Walking Dead right now. So this is part of the reason why I'm willing to forgive, you know, some of the things that we've seen in this episode, because there's a lot of great TV here, and you've got, you know, over 100 episodes here, and you know, a lot of them much longer than normal. So, you know, probably works out to about 120 ish total. I think there's like 112 total right now, but probably works out to about 120 in terms of length. Maybe more. I don't know. But the point being is there's all this story and people want everything to fit just nicely. And that's not reality. Stories are made up by people in a writer's room over eight seasons. You've had three, about to be the fourth showrunner. These things change and directions change and things get retconned. Now, that said, though, so I'm willing to forgive some of it, but this was an example of something I've seen in several episodes of Angela Kang that make me kind of concerned, because it's like I say, placed a certain, you know, a certain thing said by a certain, any character changes, you know, the thought about, you know, the Walker guts killing people, because we say that's never happened before, but that doesn't happen. And I worry about that, because I've seen plot holes in a lot of her episodes, and I'm hoping we're not going to see that kind of thing continue when she becomes showrunner. So I worry at this point. I've said before, that, you know, I want the show to be as good as it can possibly be. And when it's not as good, you know, I feel disappointed. But I still love it, because, you know, when it's good, it's magical. I just want the show to be as good as it can be. And, I would love it if, you know, people started coming back, but I don't know. Speaking of viewers coming back, that was a segue into, our ratings for this episode, according to not us, but Nielsen. this episode of The Walking Dead got a 2.95 in the 18 to 49, and that's up from last week's 2.83. So that's not a big jump, but it is a jump ever so slightly. And it got 6.774 million viewers, and that's versus last week's 6.663. So that's 111,000 difference in the estimates. So not bad. Talking Dead at the later hour, you would expect, wouldn't get as good ratings, and it didn't. It got a 0.60 in the 18 to 49 with 1.597 million viewers. Last week, it got a 1.09 with 2.663 million viewers. So, you know, quite a bit down, but I guess to be expected. And if you're curious, the show that we mentioned before, which was The Terror on that 10 o'clock hour, it got a 1.34 with 3.336 million. I don't know how it did in that second episode, but I got to say, I wasn't impressed. What about you? Did you watch it, and what did you think of it?
The Terror? I'm kind of one of those people that like something that's somewhat historical. So since it was based in that era, it just intrigued me. It was kind of interesting how they bring in consumption and all the illnesses back in that day, and then they try to do a backstory with actually within the first hour of when they were when I saw it. I haven't watched. I think it's supposed to be a 2-hour premiere, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you'd watched last night's second part, but
no, I only saw the first part after The Walking Dead, and that was it. But I found it intriguing that they actually brought all those elements in. It's something that's ongoing. Anything historical, it usually captivates me, and it's a Ridley Scott show, so you know he was the writer supposedly on this, or the head on this, and that always intrigues me because I'm a Ridley Scott fan. But it's interesting. That's all I could say. It's very interesting for those who are into the idea of historical things that have happened that we don't know, that are based upon stories. This is one of those things to watch. But if you're not into anything like that, into some sort of suspense, then this is not for you. You know, I would go on and move on.
Yeah.
It might not last the show.
It looks like it doesn't show the 9 o'clock Terror ratings, but, yeah, it got a 0.4 and, 1.388 million.
Wow.
In the second. But that's exactly what you would expect to happen. You know, it got a big lead in from The Walking Dead, and a lot of people, you know, aren't going to pick it up and on live the second day. I mean, some of them did. I don't know. I'll probably go and watch the second episode, and kind of decide, what I think about it after that. But I wasn't really impressed, but I also should say I wasn't paying as much attention as I was when The Walking Dead was on. So that might have had something to do with it. So I'll watch it just to see. I can't like it less than Into the Badlands, which by about the third or fourth episode, I just couldn't stand it anymore.
I can't stand Into the Badlands at all.
Yeah.
And they're actually marketing it again, and I really can't stand it. And as soon as it comes back on, usually at every Walker Stalker, they'll bring it up and they'll put it out, and that's how they'll market it. And a lot of people are not into it. I'm not.
I am definitely not into it. And you know, it's apocalyptical, but that doesn't mean that, you know, I come at this as a, you know, I love apocalyptic fiction, but that doesn't mean I love all apocalyptic fiction. I just love, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Z Nation either. So, you know,
I'd watch it for the humor.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I just, you know, I got behind and never went back. So, all right. So we've got a couple of, actually, we've got three news items. Two of them are related. So first of all, WonderCon was this past weekend. That's another convention done by the San Diego Comic-Con people. And on that, there was a panel with Fear the Walking Dead. So strangely enough, Kim Dickens wasn't there. I'm not sure why. You know, they didn't have everybody, but they had Lenny James, they had Alicia Debben Carey Coleman Domingo, and they had several of the new people that are on that show, and the new showrunners, and Gimple, you know, in his overarching chief content officer kind of thing. And Nicotero was there as well. And anyway, it's a really interesting panel. I've watched it. There's a link to it on the Facebook group. So if you're a member of that, you can watch it there. And if you're not a member,
are you kidding me?
says Negan. And as part of that, there was a new trailer, full length trailer. I think it was like 3+ minutes of season 4 of Fear. So did you get a chance to watch that?
Oh yeah. I was really happy about it. It's got me pumped for it. Anything that has to do with an amusement park in it. Awesome. Because they show Alicia going in there and a new character. On top of that, Nick getting his face full of dirt by Morgan.
Yeah, that was a nice ending. And what I saw there was something that, I really enjoy it. It's when I've talked about this before on this show, how the plot should be driven by the characters and, you know, the actions that they do in character. And what I'm seeing in the trailer, and, you know, mind you, that's a big stretch to say, but what it looks like to me is we're going to see stories based on these personalities, these characters. And that's what I love. And, I've heard nothing but good things about the season 4. You know, there's no reviews of it out yet, but, you know, just little, you know, whispers out there that apparently the first couple episodes are phenomenal. So I can't wait to see him. And it's not too much longer, you know, basically 2 weeks from next Sunday, we'll have Fear. So that's funny. Did you ever think we were going to have a time when we were anticipating Fear to the extent of thinking it might actually be better than the original? I still can't get over it, but I am welcome to see it for sure. But yeah, it was quirky. That's the thing I liked about it too. It showed personality. Let's not spoil it for people that don't want to watch it. Not give too much detail, but yeah, I mean, we see a lot of new characters. We see the characters that we know. We see one character that we know doesn't appear to be there, and that's Daniel. So I'm really curious what happened to Daniel. Because I was hoping he was going to be a part of season 4, but seems not. And they have brought back Luciana, which I don't know, the way that they had left her character in season 3. I liked her in season 2, but she seemed pretty useless in season 3. So hopefully they'll bring back some of the good parts of her in season 2. I don't know, but
yeah.
The other article is something that is not new, but there was an article, was on IO9. They had interviewed Jeffrey DeMunn, who played Dale, first 2 seasons. And this is a story I'd heard before, but it, you know, came to light again this week that he chose to be bit and to, you know, go off the show. And I think a lot of that, like if you look at the history, you know, his filmography and Darabont's filmography, I mean, you'd see that they worked together a lot. They even worked together on the show that
Shawshank. They did the Shawshank Redemption, The Mist,
Green
Mile, Mice and Men, The Green Mile. Yep, there's so many.
Yeah. So you know that's part of the reason that why I think he left. He basically, you know, he didn't like the treatment that Darabont got. And, you know, I totally understand that because, you know, it seemed kind of shady at the time. But they, you know, he decided that he wanted to be off the show. So, you know, they.
Yeah, well, you'll get a kick out of this. Jason Kabazi, as you and I both know, I was at Walker Stalker in New York, New Jersey about, I would say about 3 years ago. And Jason was talking to Jeff Damon and Lori Holden. And that's when Lori Holden and both Jeff Damon brought out about how, why they left and the reasons why they left. It was more about Lori Holden, but since that con, Jeff Damon had stated emphatically as how much he was more of there for Darabont more than anything. And Lori Holden at the time was promised 8 years mm-hmm. of a contract. And it was really interesting and riveting. It's like, literally, I was sitting in the con watching the panel, and within like 20 minutes in, it was already on a website as, hey, this is what she says, spoilers. I'm like somebody was probably sitting right next to me and posting this mm-hmm. onto a major website. And it was amazing. But they were advocates of Jeff was definitely an advocate for Darabont at that time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he's definitely a talented actor too. And I always loved everything he had done. So, he felt bad. He had a bad taste and he asked himself to be written off mm-hmm. because of what they did with Lori. Lori Holden, but how he felt the writing was going at that time and what was going on with Darabont. Mm-hmm. But that has to go with that whole Darabont lawsuit at that point, apparently.
Yeah. You know, speaking of lawsuits, and it was something I had especially noticed, it was very evident in the WonderCon panel this week. And that is, when you see the Inside the Episode videos, and then when you see mm-hmm. panels lately, the ones that are suing with these, I mean, we do see Kirkman on, you know, maybe it's because he has other things that he's trying to push when he gets on Talking Dead. But when it comes to the Inside the Episodes and you know, speaking at panels, at cons, the ones that are suing, namely Galen Hurd, Kirkman, and
Nicotero.
Nicotero is not suing. He was not. Oh. No, he's I think he's mentioned in the suit, but he's not actually suing. He's not one of the parties. So, okay. So anyway, you will notice that those people were always at those panels and now they're not. And I have noticed, like, in the Inside the Episodes, we're not seeing Galen Hurd anymore. We're not seeing Kirkman. We're not seeing Dave Alpert. We are seeing Denise Huth, Nicotero, what's his name? Greg Luce, I think. I know it's Luce, L-U-S-E. Maybe it's Dan. I don't know.
Or Luce.
Okay. That's something I definitely noticed, that those producers that are suing don't seem to be doing those anymore like they were. Tom Luce. That's his name. Tom.
Okay.
He's never been on Talking Dead, but we do see him on the Inside the Episodes. I've never seen him on a panel either, but anyway, I do see him on the Inside the Episodes now a lot more than I used to. All right. Well, with that, we are going to wrap it up. To submit your feedback, there are many different ways. Go to goldenspowermedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio, use the SpeakPipe widget, or you can call 304-837-2278. Or, like most people in this group, with the exception of Gary this week, their feedback came through the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/group/walkingdeadgsm. We also have our email, which is walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. We don't get a lot of feedback that way, but it'd be nice if we started to. The deadline for submitting feedback is normally, and it will be for next week, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. You can also communicate with us via Twitter. Our handle is WalkingDeadGSM. No new reviews this week on Apple Podcasts or anything like that, but we would really appreciate your rating and review. If you could do that, that will help us out immensely, get noticed with the hundreds, almost, well, dozens at least, podcasts within The Walking Dead. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. That, of course, will take you to the Golden Spiral Media page within Apple Podcasts or iTunes. And that will show you all the different shows that Golden Spiral Media covers. So we've got several going on right now. And I know Westworld is coming back. We have a mutual friend that does a Westworld podcast, but here there is Beyond Westworld, which is a very popular podcast. I think that is the most popular podcast on the network.
Please check that out.
Yeah. So no new reviews, but we would really appreciate it. There are other ways to support the network at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And I just want to follow up for last week. No job yet, but I am starting to get some interest. A few recruiters are calling. I had my first interview today. This is Tuesday. So just a phone interview. So, and I've got a few things, coming for some freelance work. So it won't replace a 14-year job. So that was the one thing I didn't say last week, is I had been at my job for almost 14 years. So so many things have changed since then. No Facebook, no Twitter, no YouTube. All that stuff was not even, no Instagram. All that stuff was not around. So it's kind of a having to learn how to do this again. So, but things are going okay. Hopefully I'll have even better news next week. But as far as the GoFundMe page, that's at GoFundMe.com/TWDTTBrianHardDrive. So if you'd like to kind of help us out, and my wife doesn't work, so this situation is not so good right now. Mark, for other listeners that want to hear, you have Riddy Repartee with on your other podcast. How can they get to that?
You could actually check us out. We're on the Next Level Podcast Network. We're called Panels to Pixels. It would be myself and Steve Brown, who actually contributed some cool comments tonight on this podcast.
And he's been a guest host on here as well. He did season 8, episode 6. So
yes. So you could hear me and Steve Brown, who is my co-host on that network. So tune in if you feel like it. We talk about comic books. Comic books turn into movies, Netflix shows, TV series, old and new. And if you have any feedback, always contact us through that. The best way is to get us through our Facebook page, which is called Panels to Pixels. Thank you.
And I've mentioned the Star Trek podcast specifically. It's the very witty, clever name of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I went obvious. So, my former co-host here, Ruthie, and I do that podcast. So I know a lot of people, may be picking that up on a binge watch, or whatnot. I just had someone, message me yesterday saying they had just started listening to us. So, and they started from the beginning. So that's really cool. But anyway, that's at Star Trek Discovery Podcast.com, or you can go to Golden Spire Media and find us there. And we have, you know, we're on hiatus now, but we are going to be starting some new content, going back and looking at old Star Trek episodes. But we are recording our season one roundtable this week. So that will, I'll probably have out next week or on the weekend this week. Just depends. And you know, Ruthie and I are joined by our former, my former co-host who started the podcast, Adam, and, our very frequent contributor, Mark. So not this Mark, but, yeah. So, I'm looking forward to that. That first roundtable that we did at the halfway point was, really good. And can't wait to do that this coming week. All right. So the next episode is season 8, episode 14, Still Gotta Mean Something. And we don't know who it's written or directed by, but there is a very interesting description, specifically what they call that person. It says a heaps prisoner. I thought that was very, it didn't say heapster. It didn't say, you know, trash people. It said a heaps, H-E-A-P-S. And I confirmed that twice on AMC.com in two different places. A heaps prisoner makes a discovery. Carol searches for someone in the nearby forest. Well, that obviously must be Henry. And then this is really interesting. Rick and Morgan find themselves in the company of strangers. Who the heck could that be? Is that like a tie-in to next season or something? I don't know, but I mean, I don't know what else it could be. But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.